Grant your people grace to love what you command and desire what you promise, that among the swift and varied changes of the world, our hearts may surely there be fixed where true joys are to be found. Amen. On this fifth Sunday in Lent, I invite you to take stock of your life, to prepare yourself for the great story of the Passion of Jesus next week and the great mystery of resurrection, that it may change you. A few years ago when I was at Trinity Church, there was about a year in there where a group of us were tasked with creating convenings or meetings of the primates, the heads of the church and provinces or national churches, and other leaders like that of the Anglican Communion, to see if we could build some relationships among dioceses that did not revolve around the Lambeth Conference and Canterbury. So an example is we got Brazil in conversation with Portugal and Mozambique because they're all Portuguese speakers. South India was talking to South Korea. Tanzania was teaching in Costa Rica about development to see what was possible in conversation. It was really interesting to watch these committed Christians leading in very difficult circumstances, some in life-threatening conflict, talking together about how to build the church. It was awe-inspiring. One value for us as the organizers was to make sure that everyone rested well and had what they needed, that they were comfortable, they had food they liked. Our principle was we shouldn't lose a primate. No one should get sick on our watch. And we had to ensure a lot of privacy because these were the kind of people that media would be very curious about. So we ended up often in very remote places. So on one of these trips, we were in Masai Mara in Kenya, the place of the Maasai warriors. The Archbishop of Kenya is Maasai and wanted us to go to his place. It was unbelievable. Vast plains. We landed in our little wobbly plane on an airstrip in the middle of nowhere. Jackals and elephants in plain view. Every morning from the hotel, there was the option on their calendar to go on a safari, a photo safari, at 6 a.m. and at 4 p.m. And I went every single time because I'm from Dallas, Texas, after all. I know a good thing when I see it. We saw wildlife photographers with really fancy kit. We were told some were from National Geographic. And a guide would drive us in an open Jeep to see what we could find. One morning near the end of the trip, I was out there at 5:45 a.m. As always, no one was going to leave without me. And the only other people that came were the Archbishop of Sudan and his wife, and the Archbishop of South Sudan and his wife. Now, if you followed the war in Sudan and South Sudan, there is very violent conflict between Muslims and Christian warlords over land, land under which there is oil. People are dying. People are dying of hunger. There are refugees. Vast numbers of refugees. It is extraordinarily difficult and extremely conservative in every way that we would describe conservative. And this is the part of the church that our communion leaders often point to when they tell us why we cannot all collectively be more inclusive. So we all got in the Jeep together, and the guide asked what we wanted to see. Now, I had been there for about a week, and I probably hadn't had coffee yet, so I said giraffe. I had not seen one yet, and we weren't going to be there for much longer. I hadn't actually seen much of anything on all of my daily trips. I had seen things that I had already seen in India. So I said, giraffe. It was bold. One of the bishops said, lion. Someone said, hippo. I think I started the thing. We named everything that could be seen. And our guide, smiling, said, okay. And we did. We saw everything that morning. It was stunning. A massive, loping, gentle, long eyelash giraffe nibbling the leaves at the top of a tree, hippos lazing in the mud, lions and a lioness and her cubs overly full and sleeping next to the carcass of their kill from the night before, and these little sneaky jackals making their way over, waiting for the leftovers. Near the end, we were silent, in awe, and I said, we should have asked to see Jesus. I have a way of ruining a moment, right? So in our readings today, some Greeks have come to Jerusalem on pilgrimage. Remember, the central image from Sharon Brous's book is about a pilgrimage like this, but in a later time after the temple has been destroyed. These Greeks are returning to worship, it says, and in their return to their home place, maybe from generations ago, who knows, they hear about Jesus. Maybe they heard about him in the temple or on the boat ride over or walking. Maybe travelers were telling stories about him already. Jesus, the healer and the teacher, maybe the Messiah, they might have been saying. They find Philip, his disciple, who doesn't get many shots in the Bible, but here's one. They find Philip, his disciple, and they ask him, and he asks Andrew, and they take them to Jesus, who invites those who wish to serve him to follow him in today's reading. Follow, in John 12, will mean to the cross. And in this wonderful wrapping up of the life of Jesus in John 12, Jesus calls out to God and God answers aloud so that the people hear, a drawing back to the thunderous voice at his baptism that claimed him, "You are my beloved," in John 1. God says, "Now I will glorify my name in the cross." So this is your invitation on this final Sunday of Lent, and it is not a theoretical one. This year, follow Jesus. What would it mean for you to do the fundamental thing, to follow Jesus? The invitation comes from the God who has created you, whose fingerprints are on your form, who breathed a life into you that you might have embraced easily, your life might have been quite smooth up to now, or that might be a real struggle for you. Yours. The God who led the children of Israel out of Egypt by the hand, we just heard read, by the hand carries you from what enslaves you, reaches out a hand to any enslaved or crushed or fleeing or imprisoned, by that same creating hand offers new life where there has been no life. This God abides in us, we heard from Jeremiah, is within us, is for us, encourages us, inspires us, calls us to freedom and dignity and liberty, and we who are free to desire it for others. It is this God that is glorified in Jesus, and it is this Jesus that invites us to follow him on the way in our reading today. I wonder if those Greeks did follow. I wonder if they were so caught up in the glory of pilgrimage, surrounded by their people at home, far away, if even for this brief time, trying to remember everything their eyes saw or their hands came across, to tell everyone back home, to tell their children, to tell their children's children. And now this healer, this teacher, maybe the Messiah. I wonder what they did next. I wonder if they met Paul later in their place in Greece. What would you do if you asked to see Jesus and the guy you asked knew a guy and they took you over? Would your response be like mine? To the gliding giraffe and the bleary-eyed lioness, awe and some terror, dumbstruck? Or to my seatmates on the ride, what do they really think of me in our church? Is there a conversation we could have had that would change something about the great distance between us? It is a tricky thing, the self-sacrificing, the self-critique, the self-aggrandizing. When is it of God and for others, and when is it still our broken hearts just on display? Or when are we just selling ourselves short, being too realistic when we should be calling down the kingdom with urgency? What is the saving stuff? What can Christ do in you? What is the covenant God writes for you, with you, this year? I invite you to consider today that when Jesus is lifted up, it is on a cross. The magnified name of Christ is in the deepest solidarity with the destitute of this world. What a radical message it is for all of us. Love has come to earth in Jesus and been rejected. Psychologically, is that our ego or our pride or our vanity? Sociologically, is it our in-group identities, what we strive for or disguise, or who we are patronizing or paternalistic towards or afraid of? Politically, is it where we choose power or smugness over the common good or just the most good? Theologically, it is about carrying the Christ light in you. It is that life laid down like a grain of wheat, a seed in this beautiful springtime we know about seeds, and the new life that emerges so urgently and shamelessly, brilliant and tender and powerful, to make life again. Theology is not about a worldview that you should agree to belong here. Theology is about the most true things, the way you are made, the way we are wired, the way life actually works. The illusions, the temptations, or the other categories the world makes to make you act in service of this world that crucifies Christ. The world in which our Jesus lifted up will be upon a cross. The world sin will tempt you to believe is the only way it can be. Genocide, famine, hate, self-loathing. There is plenty of illusion to be had. So I invite you to pray better than me when you were asked. Ask to see Jesus, no doubt in my mind that you will, and he will meet you somewhere beyond every expectation and every grief. Somewhere you didn't know was a part of you, far from who you thought your friends were, to a place of strangers in the deepest solidarity and understanding and awe. Out there where love waits, wonders glide by, and your saving work is obvious, and you are ready. What is the new covenant that God offers you? What would you take to Jesus if you were brought before him today? Because you are. In the words attributed to our friend Patrick, may Christ be beside you, before you, behind you, within you, beneath you, above you, Christ raised high for you. I pray for you a blessed final week of Lent.